Welcome to this Expert HR podcast with me, Laura Merrilies. Today we're going to be looking at some important employment cases that have gone under the radar of mainstream media but could have significant implications for your business. My guest is Stephen Simpson, Principal Employment Law Editor here at Expert HR. So Stephen, can we kick off with a case of Royal Mail Limited and Duty?
Yes, so we're talking here about what are known as manipulation cases. So this is where a decision maker, say a senior manager, is making an honest decision based on the facts before them, but someone else within the organisation has unfairly influenced the decision. So the essential point of law is whether an employer can escape liability for unfair dismissal on the basis that the decision maker was unknowingly influenced by the manipulator's actions.
Okay, so can you give us some practical examples of how that could arise?
Yeah, so helpfully here, the Court of Appeal gave four examples, which I think are useful to outline. So firstly, an employee's colleague gives false evidence that leads the decision maker to make an innocent but unfair decision to dismiss. Secondly, an employee's line manager does not have responsibility for the dismissal, but manipulates the process to ensure the employee's dismissal. An example here could be the line manager exaggerating poor performance or conduct. Thirdly, the manipulator is a middle manager with some responsibility for the investigation, although the manager is not the actual decision maker. And then fourthly, someone at or near the top of the employer's hierarchy procures a dismissal by deliberately manipulating evidence before the decision maker.
Okay, so into which category then did Miss Duty's case fall?
So very much into the second category, a line manager manipulating the process. So Miss Duty was a media specialist for Royal Mail who raised concerns, i.e. she blew the whistle, with her line manager over the alleged irregularities in the way in which colleagues were offering discounts to customers. Ms. Schutte subsequently found herself being put under pressure by her line manager to withdraw her allegations, which she actually did in the end.
Okay, but then she later went on to lodge a complaint, didn't she?
Yeah, so she complained about unreasonable performance improvement targets, but was dismissed by the head of operations after the line manager gave evidence in dismissal proceedings that she had not followed up his training recommendations to improve her performance.
Right, okay, so how did the Employment Tribunal and the Employment Appeal Tribunal approach her unfair dismissal claim?
So at first instance, the Tribunal decided that her disclosure was not part of the decision-making process, i.e. the reason to dismiss her, and they genuinely believed that she was a poor performer. However, the EAT decided that even if a decision is made by an individual who does not have all the relevant facts or is being manipulated by someone else, the unlawful motive can be attributed to the employer.
Right, okay, but the Court of Appeal then went on to reverse the EAT decision, didn't it?
Yes, it essentially went back to what the tribunal said, which was that in unfair dismissal claims, you shouldn't normally consider the mental processes of anyone other than decision makers, even if that sometimes leads to an unfair outcome.
Did the Court of Appeal suggest that there would be any exceptions to that rule, though, that general rule?
Actually, it tentatively suggested that there may be arguments for attributing the motivations of a very senior individual, for example, a CEO, to the organisation. But the Court of Appeal declined to make a definitive ruling on that.
And the case now goes on to the Supreme Court?
Yes, so permission's already been granted to appeal to the Supreme Court. So this important case will probably be heard in late 2018, early 2019.
So moving on then to the next case. Well, data protection certainly seems to be a theme for the year. And this case concerns data protection breaches. And it's the case of various claimants and Morrisons Supermarket.
Yes, so as you say, this is a very topical case in which a large group of Morrisons employees brought a claim in the High Court for data protection breaches. The data protection breaches occurred after an ex-member of the IT staff who was involved in handling payroll data sent personal data of 10,000 employees to two newspapers. So this included names, addresses, gender, dates of birth, phone numbers, national insurance numbers, bank information and salary details. So masses of personal data. And the information was also posted on a file sharing website.
Right, okay. So was the individual prosecuted then?
Yes, he was prosecuted and convicted of various offences under the Computer Misuse Act 1990 and Data Protection Act 1998, which has now been replaced by the Data Protection Act 2018. But a large group of employees brought claims against the employer in the High Court for breaches of the Data Protection Act and a common law for misuse of private information and breach of confidence.
And what did the High Court decide?
So the High Court accepted that Morrisons was vicariously liable for the rogue ex-employee's actions. There was a sufficient connection between the ex-employee's position and his wrongful conduct.
Okay, so why is this such a concerning case for employers?
So I think it's a really difficult one for employers because on the face of it, there's very little that Morrisons could have done differently to have prevented what happened. There is always the possibility that an employee in a position of trust leaves and takes data with them and misuses it, no matter how good the employer's security.
Right, okay. But is there any good news for employers?
Well, I guess in light of the GDPR, the huge focus on data security in the last few years should decrease the chances of large data breaches, assuming employers have taken steps to tighten up their data security. Plus, we do know that Morrisons is appealing the case to the High Court, so there's always a possibility that the High Court decision will be overturned.
And do we know when that case is likely to be heard then?
Yes, so it's listed to be heard in the Court of Appeal on 9th of October 2018, so we should have a judgment either just before or just after Christmas.
So looking now at yet a different area again, and that's restrictive covenants and the case of Tilman and Egon Zehnder Limited. What was the issue in this restrictive covenants case?
So Tilman involved a senior member of staff within financial services group Egon Zehnder wishing to take up employment with the US firm, but on the face of being prevented from doing so as a result of a restrictive covenant. Her contract of employment contained a six-month non-compete clause that stipulated that she should not, to quote, directly or indirectly engage or be concerned or interested in any business carried out in competition.
So this was a very wide restrictive covenant then, wasn't it?
Yes, so it could be argued that it not only prevented her from working for a competitor for 6 months, but that the words concerned or interested in prevented her from being a shareholder in a competitor.
Okay, but the High Court found the restrictive covenant to be enforceable.
Yes, so the High Court looked at the agreement as a whole and concluded that the restrictive covenant was not intended to cover shares in other companies. This was because another clause in the contract of employment expressly permitted a 5% shareholding in competing businesses. The High Court enforced the clause, meaning that Ms. Tilman could not work for the US firm for the six-month period.
But the Court of Appeal disagreed, didn't they?
Yeah, the Court of Appeal interpreted the phrase interested in using its everyday natural meaning and concluded that this could include a person holding shares in a company. This meant that the clause was too wide and had to be set aside in its entirety, meaning that Ms. Tilman was free to work for the US firm.
Okay, so what happens next?
Permission to appeal was granted earlier in 2018, meaning that the Supreme Court should hear the case later in 2018 or in the first half of 2019.
And so why is this case so important for employers?
So I'd say whatever happens in the Supreme Court, this case is a stark reminder to employers of the legal disputes that can occur if restrictive covenants are drafted very widely or that they may be unenforceable in their entirety if they're too wide.
We have further information on restrictive covenants if you want to delve in deeper in that area in a dedicated podcast that we recorded with Patrick Brodie from the law firm RPC. So moving on again now to yet another different area, the case of Lopez, Rebolda and others versus Spain, and this is the covert recording of employees. What happened in this case?
So a supermarket company in Spain suspected that staff thefts were taking place and installed visible cameras at entrances and exits, but also hidden cameras on the checkouts. On the basis of the covert footage from the hidden cameras, a number of workers were dismissed for theft and for helping customers and colleagues to steal stock.
And the workers challenged the employers' actions in the Spanish courts and then in Europe.
Yes, the Spanish domestic court found that while their dismissals were fair, the employees were not informed of the installation of the covert video surveillance or of their rights under Spain's Personal Data Protection Act. The workers took their case to the European Court of Human Rights, to which, to a lot of people's surprise, found it their right to privacy under Article 8 of the European Convention on Human Rights had been breached.
So was the decision a surprise?
Yes, it was somewhat fact-specific because the employer breached Spanish data protection laws and the CCTV installed was constant and widespread. However, common sense dictates that a company that's suffering losses because of staff thefts should be entitled to carry out covert video surveillance, at least until the culprits are caught and the situation improves.
Yeah, and if the company had told staff about the CCTV on the tills, presumably the thefts would have stopped and the culprits might never have been caught.
Yes, and the suggestion from this case could be that employers are breaching a thief's human rights if they're caught via covert CCTV, and that's going to be concerning for all employers.
Yeah, so what happens next in the case?
So the case now goes to the Grand Chamber panel in the European Court of Human Rights for the case to be reconsidered. So there's still a chance for this controversial decision to be changed.
So Stephen, turning now to the final case that you want to highlight, and this concerns misconduct at work events and the case of Bellman and Northampton Recruitment Limited.
Yes, so alcohol-fuelled violence at a workplace party. So this, in this very serious case, Mr. Bellman, a sales manager, attended his employer's Christmas party. There was a free bar, and after the party had ended, a number of employees went on to a hotel for further drinks. There was an argument about work matters between staff and the managing director, which ended in the managing director seriously assaulting Mr. Bellman, who sustained brain damage.
Mr. Bellman claimed damages for personal injury against his employer.
Yes, in the High Court, on the basis that the employer was vicariously liable for the actions of the managing director.
Okay, so what was the key issue for the High Court?
So this was a classic case of vicarious liability. As I'm sure many listeners will know, employers can be liable for the violent acts of employees if the employee was acting in the course or scope of their employment.
Okay, and in this case, what did the High Court decide?
So the High Court here accepted that while the director was authorised to act on the company's behalf and had been given a wide remit to do so, this did not mean that the director could be considered to be on duty when in the company of other employees all the time. In this case, the assault was committed after and not during the work event. It was a recreational activity and not something properly viewed as being in the course of employment. And it resulted from an impromptu drinking session and an extension of the Christmas party.
Okay, so the employer wasn't found liable.
That's right. So the High Court held that there was an insufficient connection between the position in which the director was employed and the assault to make it right for his employer to be vicariously liable.
So when is the appeal in this case being heard?
So Mr. Bellman's appeal against the High Court decision is listed to be heard on 18th or 19th of July. So we should get a judgment in time for the 2018 Christmas party season.
Okay, well, thanks very much, Stephen. And to link through to the cases we've been talking about today, do go to our Law Reports tool where you'll find all the details, including the full report and the high-level implications. Well, that brings us to the end of this Expert HR podcast. Thanks for listening, and we look forward to you joining us again next time.